people talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on the wars we fight and griping about the way things ought to be. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting and talking down to me. If you don't love it, leave it, let this song I'm singing be a warning. If you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me.
When you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. And that's the name of this program here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Well, tonight we had the leaders' debate here in Canada, the leaders of the six major federal parties. Well, five federal parties and one an entirely Quebec party. And that's the Bloc Québécois, the separatists. But the six leaders debated tonight, and it was quite an interesting debate. Of course, I suppose opinions may vary, but I believe that Maxime Bernier, the leader of the People's Party of Canada, and that's the party I'm supporting, did very, very well. But first of all, this might have been his first introduction to some audiences in English Canada. Now, he had been a Conservative Party politician up until he quit the party a little over a year ago. He had also run for the leadership of the Conservative Party in 2017 and had come within a whisker of winning it. So, a man who's not exactly unknown on the national political canvas, but still, this was his first exposure. He was forthright. He was aggressive. He stuck very. He emphasized immigration, major cuts in immigration, and he held his ground. And very preachy was the NDP leader, Jagmeet Singh. And Jagmeet was very vocal, a typical mouthy East Indian, and talking about leadership is about bringing people together, not dividing. And this is a standard argument of the left in Canada. They attack people like Donald Trump, or in this case, Maxime Bernier, and sometimes conservatives in general, especially if you criticize immigration. You're dividing people. You're a divider. And Maxime Bernier, I think, nailed him. He said, but you were the one who strongly objected to my participating in this debate. What about inclusion? What about your love of diversity? He really nailed him. Well, Jagmeet Singh was not exactly lost for words. He said, but he did not want to see a platform being given to hate. And this is as close as I think we came to revealing the ugly face of not only political correctness, but also the ugly face of censorship. And this is, of course, a point I've made many, many times, but it's well worth making again. And that is, some of these slogans of political correctness, or cultural Marxism, really, are completely phony. In fact, they are all the opposite. The meaning is the opposite of the surface meaning, just as in George Orwell's 1984. The Ministry of Peace was the Ministry of War. The Ministry of Truth was the Ministry of Lying Government Propaganda. And with political correctness, or culture, it's really cultural Marxism. With cultural Marxism, inclusion does not mean you. If you're white and male and heterosexual, it doesn't mean you. In fact, you're excluded. They don't want you. And diversity, if you think that means diversity of opinions, that they'd like to hear what you have to say, they don't want to hear that either. In fact, when they talk about diversity, they don't want you. They don't. You are not included. And I thought that was a very telling moment. So consensus of people I talked to, and my own opinion, was that the tonight went very, very well for the People's Party of Canada, and new ads are going to be, or there'll be new television ads starting up quite soon. And I'm going to see if I can't play one of these ads for you. Why am I not able to do that? I'll try to see if I can't get this in Twitter, on my Twitter account. Well, I was went into a variety store, we used to call it a smoke shop, but earlier today to buy a newspaper, and I asked for a Globe and Mail, I was told it was $4.25. I thought that price gone up because its major national competitor, the Globe and Mail, purports to be a national paper, not just a local Toronto paper. The competitors, the National Post, and it's $3. I walked out. I didn't buy it. I ended up buying it somewhere else. But the particular seedy little place where I was is a smoke shop in Etobicoke, and run by an Oriental, I think a Chinaman, and quite frankly, the place stank. Yeah, it stank. And what really bothered me is the general unkempt nature of the place, unkempt, messy, and it smelled. I thought, this is my country. Why? Why do we have this type of thing? Why do we have? Why do we have places? You know, it's so. Faith Goldie. She ran for mayor of Toronto last in 2018. She did very well. And this is the part of the debate that I talked about. She says, here is Jagmeet Singh, the NDP leader. You don't deserve a platform. That's what he says to Maxime Bernier. And she says, and here's a guy who's banned from India for his own in-group preference. He is closely tied with some of the Sikh radicals who want to form their own independent state called Khalistan, and some of them have involved themselves in violence. And Faith Goldie comments, here's a guy who's banned from India for his own group preference, born from immigrant parents, telling the son of a French-Canadian radio host and politician, you don't deserve a platform, such assimilation. And I might add to that, this is the totalitarian state of mind that some of these people bring to the new country. They come from countries where there is not a lot of tolerance of others. And Faith Goldie says this is the sort of stuff red pilling moments are made of. I might also say not only is Maxime Bernier French Canadian. But his family has been in Quebec for over 300 years. These are founding settler people. This is so insulting. And I think that there will be a lot of Canadians who will take it that way. You know, how dare you try to exclude him? And he said, you're all for tolerance, as long as people are saying what you want to hear. Another commentator to tonight's Spencer Fernando says, disappointing. The military spending was totally absent from the leaders' debate. Does anyone actually think that totally depleted and basically defunded military is a smart move in a dangerous and increasingly chaotic world? Kind of a good point there. Still trying to find this this for you. It was actually Josiah notes. Tonight's highlight was the establishment panicking as they lost control of the narrative. Maxime Bernier trended number two ahead of the other leaders as the People's Party of Canada was the most Googled party. Natalie comments, the Green Party leader, Elizabeth May, must identify as a squirrel. She's because she's nuts. Her main stock in trade was that we are in a climate disaster, a climate change crisis, and we need radical measures. And she was saying that none of the other parties offered these measures. To their credit, the Conservatives don't go along with the climate change nonsense. Well, they say they believe in it, but they're essentially that what they propose would be anti-pollution measures, which are okay as far as they go, and they would get rid of the carbon tax. Well, good on them for that. Maxime Bernier all but says that he does not believe in the man-caused climate change narrative, and that he will, he too would abolish the carbon tax. Theresa May came across as a person who's bought into this utterly destructive ideology, wanting to be carbon free by 2050. Yeah, I mean, let's be quite clear what that means. Carbon free by 2050 means that we won't have any more natural gas or gasoline or diesel. What are we going to run our vehicles on? I know. Well, electricity? Well, at the present time, that's simply not practical. Here are some of the comments from the debate. This is Maxime Bernier taking on the globalist.
And we put Canada first. The other leaders on this stage are globalists. They spend your money to buy a seat at the UN Security Council, and also they are giving your money.
Some reason
we... and build roads in Africa. The UN is a dysfunctional organization, and we must be able to fight for our country. Actually, we are the only party that will have a foreign policy that is based on our security and prosperity for our country. Thank you. We are...
Maxime Bernier hit some very, very important points today, and I'm going to see if I'm still very eager to play you something from the debate tonight that I found particularly good, and Andrew Scheer, to his credit, he's the conservative leader, said that he would finance some of the tax cuts that he proposed by reducing our foreign aid by 25%. Well, Elizabeth May nearly bit his head off for that. I think he was. Andrew Scheer, the conservative leader, was actually advocating something that I have advocated in the organization I started back in 1981. This was Citizens for Foreign Aid Reform. This is one of our key points that most foreign aid accomplished very little, or it was actually the transfer of wealth from working or poor people in developed countries, or in this case Canada, to the elites and the wealthy people of third world countries. It did not encourage them to adopt economic measures or other measures necessary for the development of their countries. It allowed them to continue in their dysfunctional ways. For instance, massive arms buildups, or grandiose public works projects that accomplish. Now, they're really just ego stroking for the elite. For instance, at one point, I think in the 70s, the Nigerian dictatorship at the time built some immense, I think it was something like a 16-lane mega expressway from the airport to downtown Lagos, or the capital of of Nigeria. Well, a good road, yes, there'd be some use for that. A mega expressway like that, I think it was dedicated to the military dictator at the time. That type of behavior, that dysfunctional behavior, is enabled by foreign aid. And similarly, part of the problem of some countries, particularly Africa, is breeding. That they have far more children than they can support. Or let's put it this way. They need to cut back on the number of children they have. A 100 years ago, if the average, assuming she lived that long, African woman or had 8 children through her lifetime, well, probably 6.5 or 6 would die, which means that there is no real net increase in population, because you need 2.1 children per woman of childbearing age to increase the population. So in the end, the population was relatively stable and was kept to some extent in balance with the resources. Well, along comes Western aid and Western medicine and Western doctors and missionaries. And now, today, of the 8 children, she'll still continue to have 8 children, but today, 7.5 of them. What you have is a massive, massive population increase, outstripping the resources of the land. Well, it's not up to us to make the decision of who will breed or whatever. But if they're ever going to get a handle on their population explosion, which in many of these countries exceeds the resources, these are decisions they'll have to make. Well, foreign aid, we've always argued, simply allows them the indulgence to avoid that. It's like an indulgent parent paying a profligate child's bills or bailing them out. Now, when a child in the transition from babyhood to adulthood, there's of course some role for parents, helping out and so on, smoothing things over. But if a parent is continuing to bail a child out when the child is 25, 30, 40, well, there's a problem here. Well, the conservatives have quite rightly decided to seriously cut back foreign aid. And now, this was not going to by any means pay for some of the cuts that they wanted, some of the tax cuts they want to make. But it's a step in the right direction. And I guess I pat myself on the back to a certain extent that ideas I've put out there for 4 decades are finally beginning to have an audience. Now, here's some interesting news. What we keep hearing, the Earth is about to burn up, and so on. There were, of course, forest fires in some of the Brazilian Amazon a couple of months back, and the usual dire warnings and threats. Well, okay. Well, but what's the reality? Well, NASA, that's the American Space Agency, says Earth is greener today than 20 years ago, thanks to China and India. Really? Oh, NASA has some good news. The world is a greener place today than it was 20 years ago. What prompted the change? Well, it appears China and India can take the majority of the credit. In contrast to the perception of China and India's willingness to overexploit land, water, and resources for economic gain, the countries are responsible for the largest greening of the planet in the past 2 decades. The 2 most populous countries on Earth have implemented ambitious tree planting programs and scaled up their implementation and technology around agriculture. India continues to break the world's record in tree planting, with 800,000 Indians planting 50 million trees in just 24 hours. The recent findings by NASA and published in the journal Nature, published in the journal Nature Sustainability, compared satellite data from the mid-1990s to today using high-resolution imagery. Initially, the researchers were unsure what caused a significant uptick in greening around the planet. It was unclear whether a warming planet, increased carbon dioxide, or a wetter climate could have caused more plants to grow. There's another interesting point. A slight increase in carbon dioxide, far from being, we're going to burn up. No, carbon dioxide is essential for plants. Plants then, through their magic, turn that into oxygen. Good thing, not a problem. After further investigation of the satellite imagery, the researchers found that, that greening was disproportionately located in China and India. If the greening was primarily a response from climate change and a warming planet, the increased vegetation shouldn't be limited to country borders. In addition, higher latitude regions should become greener faster than lower at latitudes as permafrost melts and areas like northern Russia become more habitable. A map put out by NASA shows the relative greening increase in vegetation and browning or decrease in vegetation around the globe. Both China and India have had significant greening. The United States sits at number 7 in the total change in vegetation percentage by decade. A country that largely kept their forests and vegetation intact would have little room to increase percentage vegetation, whereas a country that relied heavily, that once relied on deforestation, would have more room to grow. And that's a valuable caveat here. One of the few suggestions that the trust fund kid, our prime minister, the liberal leader, made that it contains any sense is his suggestion that his promise that his government would plant, I think it was 2 billion trees over the next 10 years. Assuming you can plant, attach much, put much stock in that, that actually wouldn't be a bad idea. Often what we are told is the opposite of reality. And I'm going to see if I can finally find this ad that they're going to put out. This is the People's Party of Canada is going to have an ad that will start running very soon. The Conservative Party of Canada has completely abandoned any pretense of being immigration reformers, other than the promise that they will turn back the illegals that are pouring across the Quebec border. I mean, to be fair, but. Scheer wants to bring in 350,000 immigrants a year. Exactly the same amount, same number, the same goal as the Liberals have. So people quite rightly complain that in many ways the Conservatives are the Liberal Party light. Amazing. Which proves to me that Scheer just doesn't get it. In fact, in his immigration statement about a month and a half ago, his platform, he said that given the fact that the baby boomers have or have retired or are in the process, the last of us are in the process of retiring, we need more people, we need immigrants to fill the jobs that we've left. And you wonder, I don't think he thought this up on his own. You wonder what nonsense has been poured in his ear. The baby boomers were the people who were born from 1945 to roughly 1965. So though the baby boomers are now all retired, or mostly retired. If you were born on the very top end, 1965, you would be 54. So you're within 11 years of retirement. If you're born at the beginning of the baby boom, 1945, you're going to be 74 years old. You almost certainly have been retired for a few years. So, then who's doing the work today? Well, yeah, that's right. The children of the baby boomers, and in many cases, their grandchildren. That's the workforce, and the argument that we need more people, we need more immigrants, might have some validity if we had full employment and had jobs begging. No, but the opposite is the case right now. What we have is officially about 6% unemployment. That's officially. Real unemployment is over 10%. The reason for the discrepancy is this: for jiggery pokery reasons that I can't explain, you are only considered unemployed in this country if you are collecting unemployment insurance. But if you are unable to find a job and your insurance runs out and you go on welfare, you're no longer unemployed. You know, there's an old saying that the figures don't lie, but liars figure. Well, this is unfortunately a very good example of that. Figures don't lie, but liars do figure. And the point being, though, that if we are going to allowing huge numbers of immigrants on the basis that the baby boomers have retired or are about to retire, and therefore who's going to fill their shoes, who's going to do the jobs they did, this just completely ignores the fact that the people that are going to do their jobs are the people who are their children or their grandchildren, many of whom are all already in the workforce, like no problemo. It's like the near hysteria about global warming. Climate change, because it's not clear that the world is in fact warming. Well, you know, some scientists say it is. Some of the propaganda put out about that turned out to be some of the figures were actually cooked. So it's not clear that the world is warming. But climate change, you can't lose on that, because climate's always changing. So having said there's climate change, all you manage to say is something that's always been there. Much noise was made largely because of Green Party leader Elizabeth May about the dire crisis of climate change, her solution is for us to go off carbon and make huge sacrifices, which will mean a huge crash in our standard of living. Or would there be another approach, which we did not hear tonight, actually from any candidate, but as the climate changes, might we have to make some adaptations? And we might. For instance, should, and this is not clear this is happening, but should the seas rise a few inches, there might be a few areas where we might have to have homes that are built very close to the water's edge. So there might have to be adaptations, but there always have been. And I remember when I would go up to my uncle's lodge on Georgian Bay. Georgian Bay, the lake level rose and fell from year to year. And it seemed to go in a pattern for over a half dozen years that the water level would rise and then it would fall. Now, because of the very, because this is on the Canadian Shield, with rocks all over the place, in the water, boaters had to be very, very cautious. You had to know the waters. And a shoal that you might be able to glide the boat over in high water and low water, you might take out your engine. So, obviously, there had to be adaptations. And in low water, if you had a very shallow bay at your cottage where you would dock your boat, it sometimes was necessary to extend your dock in order to, for the boat to be able to to land. So it was a matter, and this is very much on a small scale, but it was a matter of making adaptations. You didn't change your whole lifestyle, but this was the sort of adaptation that we made to a very minor example of climate change. And I can see in the future that type of thing being necessary. But we don't change the whole our whole world because of it. And actually, at this point, because so much of the hysterical predictions about climate change are just that, they're hysterical. We're not sure what the results, if any, will be, and then therefore we don't know what adaptations we might have to make. But we can make adaptations as the need develops. Here's some people who are into diversity. From Nigeria, Muslim group executes two Christian aid workers and vows to kill every Christian it captures. Now there's a sort of diversity we ought to be bringing to Canada. Bring some more of those type of people here. The jihadist group Boko Haram has released a video in which its militants executed two Christian aid workers who are black in Nigeria and vowed to kill every believer they capture in the future. Direct quote, they will kill every believer we capture in the future. Christians in Nigeria continue to be savaged by jihadists from all sides. Between Boko Haram and the Fulani jihadists, a genocide is in active progress. While the generally post-Christian West has little will to defend the rights of helpless, peaceful Christians. Another report from the Christian Post notes that the media has been mum about this persecution and conveniently glosses over the one-sided nature of the violence in the region. The Fulani and Boko Haram are the hammers and the Christians are the nails. The president of Nigeria, Muhammadu Buhari, is also the son of a Fulani chief. Boko Haram militants, there's a video of the execution. Islamic, according to the Morning Star News, the terrorist group Boko Haram released the video last week on its news agency site, Amaq. in the video, Lawrence Duna Dasagir and Godfrey Ali Chikagam, both members of the Church of Christ in Nigeria, in the Plateau State, are shown kneeling while three masked men armed stand behind them. The two young men had gone to Maiduguri to build shelters for people displaced by Islamic extremist violence, are then shot from behind. Speaking in the Hausa language, one terrorist states the group has vowed to kill every Christian they capture in revenge for Muslims killed in past religious conflicts in Nigeria. 2 points here. The savagery of radical Islam, and a very good reason not to want to bring these type of people to North America, right? Immigration control. And secondly, the indifference and degeneracy of so much of the West. Where are our leaders? Where are our leaders speaking out about this? You might need a search warrant to find those guys. And I think this is a hypocrisy that we should at every possible moment nail. And that's exactly what it is, hypocrisy. Here's a libertarian on Twitter, his comments about the leaders' debate tonight. Maxime Bernier of the People's Party, common sense. Justin Trudeau, more platitudes. Andrew Scheer, status quo. Jagmeet Singh, funny but still a socialist. Elizabeth May of the Green Party, batshit crazy. I kind of like that. Finally, this is the ad that I've been wanting to play for you.
And are you tired of the same thing over and over again from the liberals and conservatives? They say anything to get elected. So how can you, as a voter, keep doing the same thing and expect different results? I'm Maxime Bernier. The People's Party of Canada will reduce immigration, lower your taxes, and fight political correctness. It's time for a change. On election day, try something new. Find out more at People's Party of Canada.
Very effective ad, and this is a TV ad. He looks good, and notice how he hits some of these messages that no other politician would touch. Like immigration control. This is Paul Fromm. You're on the fighting side. I'm going to take my musical break right now. I'm going to play one of the great sons of Bakersfield. And that, of course, is Buck Owens. He brought the California Bakersfield sound to Nashville in the 1960s.
Oh, the sun's going to shine in my 5 points more.
Living.
Are you tired of the same thing over and over again from the liberal?
Well, I don't care if the sun don't shine. I don't care if the bells don't chime. Just as long as you love me. Won't gin, just as long And you say you ain't never coming back. That you're sick and tired of how I'm doing. And you're gonna head off down the track. But darling, before you go, be sure you know how much I love you. And that I'm sorry for the quarrel that we had. If you leave, you're gonna tear my world to pieces. So take it slow, be sure you know before you go. Oh, your wounded pride is blind, it's your reason. And right now you wanna hurt me if you can. A man is waiting here to take you to the station. And you're leaving with your ticket in your hand.
This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Back with you again tomorrow, same time, midnight Eastern Time. The show is repeated at 8 in the morning, 4 in the afternoon. All of those are Eastern Standard Time. And I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever.
And joined in love together, the thistle, shamrock, rose, and twine, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen, and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. And Lundy's Lane, our brave fathers side by side for freedom, homes and loved ones dear, firmly stood and nobly died. And those dear rights which they maintained, we swear to yield them never. Our watchword evermore shall be the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. Our fair dominion now extends from Cape Race to Nootka Sound. May peace forever be our lot, and plenteous store abound. And may those ties of love be ours, which discord cannot sever, and flourish green o'er freedom's home, the maple leaf forever.